And I know it sounds like it may take more time. Like, okay, I'm chasing every little detail up and down the chain. But if you're properly organized and you start those expectations off the top, it really doesn't take any more time. Yes, it does up front, of course, but when we're having UAT or post go live meetings and users are saying, "Oh my God, this is the most efficient meeting I've been in all week," because we were able just to nail through 20 issues and talk through them because we've set the communication style from the very beginning. That pays off tenfold when you're at crunch time and go live.
Welcome back to TechBox, a podcast to help you feel less stressed and more focused upon the chaos of consulting. Let's be inspired by the possibility that we can be happier by doing less in an industry obsessed with constant optimization. I'm your host, April Rest. Welcome. I'm glad you're here. Welcome back to the Tech Less podcast. I'm your host, April Rest. And today we're with our special guest, Michael Brandwine. Michael has been an IT consultant for 12 years, starting at Accenture, NetSuite, Oracle, and then working for smaller firms. He started his own firm, Artichoke Consulting, in 2021 to focus on end user enablement. Welcome, Michael. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you very much, April. Great to be here. I've listened to a couple of your podcasts recently and I love them. I'm excited to chat.
Oh, thank you. That always really makes me like so excited and feels elated to know who is listening. So thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
So Michael, what was your motivation for starting your own business?
So yeah, the big motivation was ultimately to find work-life balance. That was the personal motivation. And then the business motivation is I've been in consulting for 12 years or so, and I've seen a lot of what works and what doesn't. And I wanted to completely focus on what works, which we'll get into the end user enablement strategies in a bit. And that methodology encompasses everything that I've found that has worked. And with Artichoke, we have 100% success rate in client implementation since 2021.
Wow. Wait, we just need to pause there.
Yes.
That's amazing. That's
amazing.
Oh my gosh.
Thank you.
Wow. Yes. Congratulations.
And that all rolls right back up to the work-life balance. I mean, everyone hears stats like it's better for firms to build long-term relationships with clients than to sell to new ones and get new ones. So if you do the work right, glad to again get into end user enablement, we do get to build long-term relationships with clients. So we're spending a little less time selling, more time delivering. And I know money can be a little bit of a faux pas in the business, but that's a big part of this. Like starting my own company, obviously I need to make enough money to sustain my family. Also, I'm a new father of a 3-month-old. So yeah, the money piece, making sure, your full-time salary and benefits are replaced. All that comes into play. So kind of back to your original question, reasons for starting Artichoke. Number one, ability to do quality work for the client to sustain long-term relationships. And number two, that feeds right into me living the life I want to live and being able to spend, Fridays off with my son.
Tell us more about how your lifestyle has changed being a new father.
Biggest change, sleep. Second biggest change, I just took 12 weeks off for paternity leave. Fortunately, here in Oregon, we get something called Paid Leave Oregon, where the state replaces 50-55% of your salary for 12 weeks, even for fathers, and 14 weeks for mothers.
Oh.
So yeah, it's been a blessing. I mean, I work for myself, so when I'm not working, money's not coming in, or I don't have projects. Yeah, it's been great to get some government help there, and to take that 12 weeks off that I feel like everyone wants these days. That's a huge benefit. So I'm in retrospect, pretty astounded that I was able to do that while, running my own business. So I'm back to
Yeah.
work here on Monday. It's what, June 8th right now when we're recording. So paternity leave's wrapping up and ready to settle in with work, being a working parent.
Do you think if you had still been at one of the consulting firms, whether you, like, if they had offered parental leave, whether you would have taken the full amount, just given kind of all of the pressure around parents.
I like to think I would, but thinking back to 8 years ago and the mindset I was in working for Accenture and Oracle, I don't know if I would have. Or let me put it this way, even if I would have, I may not have enjoyed it as much as I have been able to now, just with that work stress hanging over your head. So yeah, I'm
Yeah.
trying to, get the rhythm of my son's days and find out when's good to take him out of the house and when do we need to just chill at home and make sure I'm rested so I can be the best parent for him and some fun things to do. Yeah, it's a new challenge, but when he smiles at you, man, it's so cute.
I love that. Yeah. Oh, I'm just thinking of my nieces and, like, when I hear them go, Auntie, Auntie, like, doo-doo-doo-doo, and they'll just start talking to me. It's like, okay. Not that that's the same by any
I
means
love
as being a
it.
parent, but I love, like, just hearing
Those
them.
highlights. I mean, right now we're communicating by sticking our tongues out. I do it, and then he does it back to me. I'm like, oh my God, he's learning.
They are such sponges. I love
They
this.
are. Sponge is a great word.
Goodness. Well, I'd love to hear about, when you started Artichoke, you picked to focus on end user enablement. Out of anything you could have done, why end user enablement?
Yes, I love that question. That's perfect. So that to me is what works. So looking back at, 12 years of consulting, I've done Fortune 500 big projects. I've done, work on four or five projects at a time between 20K and, 200K SOWs. And every single time, what works is when I have a good rapport with the client, they're engaged, and they understand what I'm communicating back to them when I demo or prototype the system. So, yeah, the methodology end user enablement that Artichoke publishes on now, we just, strip out all the waterfall, agile, scrum. Like, yes, we incorporate all that stuff, but the main focus is enablement. So, I'm gonna just talk here for a few minutes about
Yeah,
Artichoke's
go for it.
process.
Go for it.
We start up at the very top during the sales process, writing SOWs, setting expectations that we make sure that the end users understand the product they are getting. And if it doesn't work for them, then we try to find ways to make it work. But ultimately, if we don't have enough budget and the end users are still complaining, we will go up the chain to management, to the executives, A, ask for the budget, or B, get them to, talk to those users and say, okay, this isn't Artichoke's decision, this is our business decision. We need to move forward with this. I know it's not perfect, but we will loop back to this on the roadmap. So I think what I'm trying to say is no I's are not dotted, no T's are not crossed, because that's where I've seen projects just completely fall apart. So and that also leads us back to the 100% success rate. And I know it sounds like it may take more time, like, okay, I'm chasing every little detail up and down the chain. But if you're properly organized and you start those expectations off the top, it really doesn't take any more time. Yes, it does up front, of course, but when we're having UAT or post go live meetings and users are saying, "Oh my God, this is the most efficient meeting I've been in all week," because we were able just to nail through 20 issues and talk through them because we've set the communication style from the very beginning. That pays off tenfold when you're at crunch time and go live.
For sure. I mean, I would think that whatever upfront effort to communicate and organize, you're gonna see that return on the back end with saved time and headache and energy dealing with the fallout, right? Of not doing those things upfront.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. And too many times at other consulting firms, I've just run into roadblocks where the managers aren't on the same page with the users. And, that's reason number one why projects fall apart. And at Artichoke, that does not happen. So, yeah, in this methodology, I mean, there's a lot of ins and outs of how we do it. Actually gave a couple presentations last year at Forcelandia and Mile High Dreamin' on it, and kind of work on an ebook at some point here and just get all of our deliverables out onto our website. Kind of in a 2-minute nutshell, it starts in discovery. We're essentially learning how end users do their job. So, we're recording those sessions, taking screenshots of every page, just making sure. And this example is for, let's say, we're changing from HubSpot to Salesforce or some other system, making sure we know every little thing they click, so we're not, missing any details. How does the user do their job? And then we get that into Salesforce, and the way we communicate it back to them is, okay, here's what you showed us out of HubSpot. Here's what we're doing in Salesforce. Here's every little thing you do, and there's our foundation. So with that documentation, we can hand that back to the developers and be like, here's your test scripts, like pseudo test scripts. You have to make sure that all of these things work before you communicate it back to me as the project lead, and I communicate it back to the users and the client. So that chain of communication helps us track all functionality and just make sure nothing's missed. And then you start building confidence with the client, and prototypes are iterative. Obviously, you hear more every prototype. And then at UAT, the users are very familiar with the system. They've already logged in. And then we're getting to the fun stuff. We're like, all right, we know the ins and outs of this. Where can we add bells and whistles? We're a big documentation business. That I think that word is coming back into style a little bit after falling out of style so hard in, I don't know, 2019 or so. Just clear communication up and down the chain. The tech, I hate to say it, but it's the easy part. The hard part is the communication. So, got that technology background, and I see what makes projects work, and that's where Artichoke is headed.
And when you say that you've had 100% success rate, what does that mean to you?
That means everything to me because
I mean,
it.
like, what does that actually mean? Like, how do you measure that it was successful?
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's a great question.
Like, yes, I think
Yeah, that.
I know
No, yeah, I
it
know. I know.
means everything.
And I think I was going to get there. Yeah. It means everything to me because I know the client is happy at the end of the day. So when I say 100% success, that is not hitting, when I walk into a sales meeting with I don't know, a VP of IT, and they throw 100 ideas at you. Success is not hitting all 100 of those ideas. Success is setting expectations up and down the project so everyone is happy at the end of the day. And I think that is a unique way to measure success. And our projects are not failing because we are ultimately moving the business forward, even if it may be less than someone thought in April if we're going live in August. So the goal here is to move the business forward and get them some sort of foundation. Yeah,
And
so
also
maybe
that
not
they're
the
happy with it, which is
exactly.
both of those are hard to do in and of themselves. And then to combine that, right? Like you can be moving the business forward, but the client might not be super happy about the engagement or the communication, or the client might be happy, but you really might not be doing much. Maybe bells and whistles and things that aren't actually going to help the business move forward.
Yeah,
But kudos
100%.
for like
100%.
focusing on both and being able to deliver on both.
Thank you. It makes it more fun. It can be hard, but it's worth it.
And how does that play into the name Artichoke?
I love that question. So I have two stories for the name Artichoke. One is the business story, one is the personal story. So it's hard to name a business, man. And you have to name your business first before you can do anything, before you can register it, get a bank account. So that was actually one of my first roadblocks when I started Artichoke. The personal story is we eat a lot of artichokes here at the Brandwine household. We went to some dinner in Portland and got served an artichoke. And I don't know, we just loved them. So we eat like two or three a week and throw them in the oven, dip them in soy sauce mayo. And we were on a Zoom chat with some of our friends during COVID, and they jokingly said that I should just name my business Artichoke. And I was like, oh my God, you know what? Let's do it. It doesn't have the word cloud in it. I need to pick a name. I love it. And now I got people all over Portland saying the word artichoke, which is just a dream come true. Maybe
I love
someday I'll
this.
own artichoke.com. Unfortunately, it seems to go up to $25,000 for that URL. I'm like, please, please. And then on the business side, it plays perfectly into our methodology. So eating an artichoke, you peel back the leaves to get to the heart. So our methodology is the base, the heart, and the bloom, which are the three parts of the artichoke in our logo. So the base represents our foundations, our discovery calls, where we learn everything we need to about the client and their projects. The heart is the delivery portion, where we are taking what we learned in the base, we're building it, we're doing prototypes. And then the bloom is UAT, go live, road mapping after the fact. So classic crawl, walk, run analogy that played right into my favorite vegetable.
Oh my gosh, I love this. I love this. And I'm not sure I realize that, like you, that Artichoke is end-to-end implementation, but that you keep the end user's enablement forefront throughout the way. Is that a fair way to describe?
We are an end-to-end Salesforce implementation partner. I'm the project lead, kind of done and seen it all from testing, back up through discovery and sales. And we have a dev team, BAs. Our methodology is always to keep those users in mind. So, like I mentioned earlier, we take that discovery documentation and pass that down as our user story to developers. And then the developers, when they present it back to the BA or me, would show us, okay, we hit all of these things. The users are meeting all their requirements. Or here is what we didn't hit, and here is why. And then I'm prepared to go back to the client. So yeah, kind of, again, there's a lot of intricacies in like how this is all done, but I
course.
think our folks listening can probably picture that that could save a little time on writing documentation as far as translating discovery into user stories. If your discovery document just becomes your user story, and that's handed down and then becomes a prototype asset to present back. Yeah, so that in a nutshell is how we focus on end user enablement during the build prototype process, and just how we embed enablement in the methodology start to finish.
And you mentioned that, like, at time of UAT, most of the users like would have already logged in and maybe played around a little bit prior to. Can you talk to us about, how can I articulate this? Like, how do you go about setting those expectations up front to have the end users engaged? Are they, do you bring them into discovery? Is like, or how do you handle that,
Yeah,
those processes?
we absolutely bring them into discovery. The biggest piece of advice is to make them feel heard, because when they feel heard, they are happy and engaged and excited. So bringing them into discovery and communicating back during the prototype sessions exactly what we heard from them and how that is implemented, that's a way to just make someone's day. And then they'll get excited to meet with you. So, in an ideal fashion, yeah, let's just go through like customer service end user using Service Cloud. They have case types they own, and they, pull up these certain knowledge base articles when these cases come through. So, we'll configure that into Salesforce, get those case types in, have those knowledge base articles tagged so they show up right on the side. And then we get that information in discovery. And let's say a month later, they're in the prototype. And we come back and show them that exact scenario, call out their name, where we heard it from. We're like, hey, Mark, here's your page. Then they're excited to work with you. And that's when the best work happens.
I love too that it's very, like, it seems very use case driven versus like getting so detailed on, I don't know,
100%.
like a quarter of the page, right? Because I think like what I've seen a lot of times where we go a little wrong, where we go a little off kilter, if you will, is like what comes out of discovery is so granular that when it comes time to build, we lose like the heart of
Yeah.
what the end user was even trying to accomplish, if you will, right? So like I just love hearing, and then I can just think like how many times I've spent time working with the technical team on like the way we need to present this back needs to be in a way that makes sense for what they're doing, not like, I built you this page layout and here are the fields, but rather like, let's give it back to them as if they were using this for their job. Right. And so I'm just loving the connection
Yeah.
of like, that's what you lead with. That's what you're gathering in discovery. And that's flowing through when you go back to present your prototype.
Yeah. Yeah, that's well put. I've certainly found myself in that situation after discovery where you went down a discovery rabbit hole and you're, yeah, thinking of edge cases just as important as the base work day. So, yeah, for us doing that ride along of what do people do to do their jobs keeps us, to use the artichoke slogan, at the heart of the solution.
I love this so much. I love artichoke.
Oh.
When I was reading that on your website, I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Because first I was like, what the heck is artichoke consulting? Like what?
Yep.
Like the name. Like what? And then I was like, this is amazing.
It's a
I wish
brand
I
that
was
sticks in your
that.
mind. Yeah, that's what it
Yeah.
is.
Well, and I love like brands where it can feed into your delivery methodology. I just think
Thank
it's
you.
fun and
I
it's
agree. Yeah.
helpful.
Might as well have some fun with this whole thing, right? Let's go
Yes,
out there.
exactly. I have a question that like we haven't talked about, we haven't like prepared for. So you can let me know if you prefer to skip it. But I'm very curious, like with all of this in mind, how do you approach like a new client or someone that comes to you? How do you set these expectations up in the pre-sales cycle?
I love that question, and this is one of my deliverables that I hold closest and most dear because my estimate sheet is, I think, unique, but something that works for me. So I've done a lot of pre-sales estimation, and we do it by feature. So I don't know, it takes us 100 hours to build Flow X or develop whatever, Apex Y. And those estimates, it's just so hard to track when you go down the line. It's like, how much time did you spend on this feature? And you're like 2 months deep in a project and the feature's kind of sprinkled in everywhere. You have no idea. So I'll estimate out by people, by week. So it's like, okay, we need a developer, we need a project lead, a BA for 4 months. Here's a calendar, and then here's how many estimated hours by week we'll need each of those people. And obviously, some of the bigger features are taken into play. I'll put those in the calendar. But just being transparent with that level of estimation, right up front gives the folks I'm working with during the sales process like a sigh of relief. Like, all right, this guy isn't pulling one over on me. You know, there's a lot of sales stuff in consulting where you'll hide your estimates. But for me, it's like that sets the expectation of transparency up right from the beginning and then starts building that trust. So then when we ask for a little more time during discovery, people are more likely to give it to us because they know exactly what our goal is. And then I'll follow through in our status meetings. I'll pull up the estimate sheet and be like, all right, you asked for this new feature. We need to add 20 hours or a new week. Here's how it impacts your budget and timeline. And it makes those budget and scope questions that just loom over every consultant's head just clear cut. Like, hey, do you want to do this? Yes or no? Here's the impact. They've seen the project management, they're familiar with the estimate sheet, and I just keep that with them the whole way. So, yeah, that's how I set expectations up right off the bat. And it just sets such a good tone. And when I find people that jive with that, that's our long-term client. Like,
Yeah. That makes total sense. How about with the stakeholder management piece? Okay, I'll save that question. The other thing I'm going with the stakeholder management is expectation setting up front to have more of that transparent communication or collaboration with like the managers, executive sponsor, and also the end users. How do you set that up during that like pre-sales cycle?
I think laying out our plans up front and making sure we have touch points with all those people. Actually, yeah, I think the touch points with all those people is key. Because sometimes, actually, one project I did maybe 5 years ago, we got a 30-minute pre-sales call with the CEO, which was super cool, because he was just totally unreachable. And he said all the right things. He was like, yeah, if things go sideways, escalate to me. And things went sideways, and I escalated to him, and he never replied. So I think that's my way of saying, like, that's a way that projects will fail, is if you're missing a link in the chain. So it's an early indicator. So as long as we have, you know, maybe we set once a month meetings with that person just to escalate to them and make sure that's on the calendar. But if you're missing a link in the chain, that's a warning sign to me. And yeah, that's maybe a red flag to get out of there or just get what you need to do done and not try to continue selling to those clients.
I think there's, I mean, I don't know what the line is, but I do think, like, I've had my own clients where they need a little bit of enablement on like what it takes to get a project across the finish line. And they're like open to that. And then there's clients where they expect that like they can just kind of give you discovery. And that they're not going to be required to provide feedback on the prototype, to really do a UAT, to manage change internally across their teams. And so I think it's, I think it's been really critical in the pre-sales cycle to kind of like suss out like how ready are they and how mature are they, or like how open and how flexible are they. And like, what's their understanding of like what it actually takes to get a project over again? And I think it depends like the size of the organization, but I just see so often that gets missed and then delivery comes in and,
100%.
you know, it's just like those expectations haven't been set and maybe the client's not a great fit for the organization.
Two thoughts on that. One, like, we are changing how these folks do their job. So if they're not learning along the way, I mean, what are they getting at the end of the day? And two, running my own business, it's been so freeing to be able to just say no. If some company's not ready, I mean, a lot of us consultants have been there where we're like, man, I wish I could just drop this client because they're not ready, or tone it back and like just meet with them once a month, try to get them ready, and then ramp up project work in 4 months when they are. And that's plays back into that 100% success rate, meeting clients where they are. Yeah, it's so nice to be able to trust my gut and like act on that in a professional way.
I love that. The
I know.
luxury.
Yep, it is a luxury. Not taking this for granted at all.
I had a question on here, you know, of like what differentiates Artichoke Consulting, but I feel like we've answered that. I mean, y'all really are putting the end user and the change management, which can really make or break a project, at the forefront of everything that you're doing. Is there anything you would add to that?
That is what differentiates Artichoke Consulting 100%. And I don't want to, I kind of discount the tech stuff. I don't want to discount the tech stuff. I mean, we can do anything and everything that the other consulting firms can do. But yeah, the hard part for me is that change management piece. And so, yeah, that's our differentiator.
I love that. Yeah, it's so needed. So needed. And kind of on that same page, is there a way that you are currently tracking end user adoption or like just adoption in general, or like have we met the business goals of this project? Is there a way that you tie that back?
Yes. Number one, I think is just general energy of the team we're working with. And that's more of a qualitative thing than quantitative. But at the end of our projects, the team is usually pretty excited and happy and, you know, wants to keep working with us. They see the go live as a foundation, not the end. And then number two on the quantitative side, there's a lot of really good user login dashboards. There's stuff from Salesforce Labs, I believe, that Are users logging in? How many accounts are they making? How many opportunities, cases, all that stuff. So we definitely add that in and make sure users are using the system, and if they're not, actually following up with them, not just ignoring it. Yeah, but
Classic.
yeah,
I
the not ignoring it piece is big.
love that. It's so true, though.
Yeah, and
How about, go
oh, sorry.
ahead. No, go ahead.
Yeah, making sure users are happy and using the system is, it's more of an art than a science. You can't force it. And that comes back to the top where we're making people feel heard and they get excited to work with us. And, ideally our demos are interactive where it's a reverse demo where the end users are logging into the prototype and we're walking them through. So we're doing more listening than talking. Yeah,
Oh, I
it all
love
kind of
that.
rolls into working with excited people, and if you feel good, they feel good, everyone's happy. That's an amazing feeling, especially in consulting.
Yeah, especially. Especially. How about like tying back the implementation to any business goals, which I know you talked about is really hard. It's really hard to do. Is there anything top of mind?
Yeah, this is, I think, an elusive what is the
Mm-hmm.
ROI on my implementation question? So I know Salesforce claims a lot of things, implement Sales Cloud, get 25% more efficient in your sales process. And yeah, you can certainly measure that. But in my opinion, and again, playing into that high success rate, is a lift and shift from HubSpot to Salesforce is more of a tech change than an like sales efficiency change. So the ROI on that, or the business goal, would be just setting the system up in Salesforce. Now you have that foundation that can grow with you until the end of time. So that's one project. Or if we want to tackle a project, it's like, hey, let's make sales 25% more efficient, like Salesforce says we can. Let's pick apart the inefficiencies and make that a project. So having clear business goals and not compounding, I'm moving from HubSpot to Salesforce, now I'm going to get 25% more efficient. That's two things in one, and we're only doing one thing. So let's not kid ourselves, think we're going to get both. Let's.
Yeah, I think that's, oh my gosh, I wish that that could be plastered across any lift and shift project because typically the ones I've seen, like we're just trying to get on that first release, we're just trying to get parity functionality. And like the value is that we know that like you're gonna have reduced tech debt over time. Yes, you're gonna be able to be more efficient over time as you have different releases and like what your roadmap might look like. But again, it goes back to the end user enablement and setting expectations with those teams on like I just have seen so many times where like the budget is for a lift and shift, sponsors know it's a lift and shift. But end users are now expecting all of the bells and whistles. And it's like, but that comes in
Yeah,
the
so
future
true.
releases. Like, we need to just get you into the system, get you using it because things are going to be different, you know? Like, and then collect that feedback and then iterate and make it better. But yeah, I'm just like the two-in-one combo. I don't really know how well that works in technology implementation.
The lift and shift. Yeah, it's always nice to talk to someone else that gets this. Yeah, so let's say, how do I become more efficient as a salesperson? I want to be able to text someone from Salesforce and have it log, or have it log my LinkedIn messages. It's like, all right, well, Salesforce can do that, but that's not in the lift and shift. That's in phase two. So
Right.
let's get shifted. Let's go to phase two. Let's do it.
And it's just like, what do you mean? Like, artichokes,
Yeah.
artichokes saying no.
Yeah. Yep. It's their fault.
It's always our fault.
Yep.
It's funny though, like as I've been building out this podcast, I have had to put my like April Rust project lead hat on of like, no, April, you don't need the website. No, April, you don't need that. Like, I mean, not that that's how I talk to my clients, but that's
Right.
how I talk to myself and sometimes them in my head. It's more so of like, let's stay focused on what's the minimal, product we can get out there to get this
Yes.
launched and out into the world, right? Because it like I love that people listen to the podcast, but it could have been that zero people listen to the podcast. And would it really have been worth all of that time and effort putting like my ideal scenario out there?
Yes.
No. And it's been like, I've been in consulting 7 years now. It's taken me a hot minute to learn that for myself. Like, we love to preach MVP, but when it comes to our own work,
Oh yeah.
like, I think it's a lot harder than what we don't
I
know what we
experienced
say.
that big time building my own business. It's like, oh my God, I want this, built out blog archive and this beautiful website. And it's like, no, you get a Squarespace and you get three blogs, and then you can't have time to go back and write more. Yeah, so it's taken 3 years to kind of get to where I am today. But yeah, it's starting with the MVP. It's so hard. It's you
So
want to do
hard.
so many things.
You want to do all the things. But it's so important. Like, I have found
It
it to be
is.
so just like so helpful for me and for my clients. But I think like having lived it personally with trying to ship a product or like ship something, or it's very like tech
Yeah.
speak, but just like get something out into the universe, right? It's like when I finally just was like, F it, I'm going for it. I think it took 2 days to get everything set up to launch the podcast, and I had been dragging my feet for
Oh,
months.
yes, love
And
it.
it's like, we're
Yeah,
out here, we're doing the thing, like,
right. On
and
Spotify.
like, it's, I don't know. I want more people to just like go for it. Like, if there's something that they want to do, just go for it. Take like the 3, 4, 5 steps it takes and just like go for it. And like not have a success, learn from it and keep going, or have a success, learn from it and keep going. Anyway.
I love that. Yeah. I've had a couple people, like, since I started Artichoke, reach out for coffee and they're like, I kind of want to start my own business. What is your recommendation? And that literally what you just said is my recommendation. And it kind of leaves people miffed a little bit, but it's the truth. It's, yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I know. I can remember because it wasn't that long ago. I was receiving some advice. I was just like, just get started. And I love to plan. I mean, I've been a
Same.
project manager,
Yep.
so it's like I love to plan, and but sometimes that can be that can be like, I wouldn't say my downfall, but that's something that I have to be
Yep.
very conscious about of like, am I just planning for like plan and perfection's sake, or is this with a purpose, and how much do we really need before we can just say like, okay, we're gonna start?
Yeah.
That's something I'm constantly thinking about.
Can't believe, I'm quoting God here, but man plans, God laughs. That's
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
and that's why, back to end user enablement, like, keep talking to your people, your clients, and make them happy. Don't go back into your rabbit hole for 3 weeks and build something without showing it to them, because then you're over planning. And what if you were wrong on day three and you spent 10 more days on something and now you've just lost 10 days? So those things stack up. And yeah.
Yeah, early validation can be, not can be
Yeah, early
helpful,
validation.
is help, like, is.
Get your podcast out, see if someone listens before you
I did
spend
it.
$5,000 on a website. Yeah.
But you know what? I think it's super applicable for what we're talking about too. And even just the beyond the tech, I think if for our project managers who are out there listening, validating the ways of working early and often, a lot of that, if you can, up in the pre-sales cycle, validating what your communication is going to look like, what kind of resources on the client side you're going to need, what do you think the time investment will
Yeah.
be on the client side, all of that. Just don't make a plan off in a silo. Include the people who are going to be affected by the plan and who are also going to have to take active roles in the plan.
And
Ugh.
then just throw it on the SOW, have them sign it and think it's done. Yeah.
I've had clients that haven't even read the SOW.
Yeah, I believe it. Yep.
And I'm like, excuse me, what?
I'm too busy.
And I've gone back to the AE and I've been like, excuse me.
Yeah. Oh my
What? You did
God.
not go over this with
Yeah.
them.
Speaking of red flags.
I'm not
Yeah.
gonna name names here. And I, you know what?
Nope.
I'm not above reproach myself. I have made mistakes. I have made probably all the mistakes you could make as a project manager. And I like to think I've learned from them. But some
Exactly.
of these I'm like, ay. And same with me. I know there are so many things that I've done in my early career where I go back and I'm just kind of like, oh wow. I really have more respect for the project lead at the time or my manager at the time or
Yeah,
whoever. Because I'm like,
yes.
wow, I knew nothing.
Yeah. Oh my God.
And now
Yep.
I'm like, oh, I know the least amount I've ever known, right? Because I think as
Yep.
we grow and we mature, we get more of a sense that there's so much out there that we don't know.
Yes. Yeah, and having a 3-month-old, I don't know what my day looks like. Let's just be honest. So I'm not gonna try to force some work into my day and burn myself up. Yeah, I don't even know what my day looks like anymore. So how's planning for me now?
Right, exactly. So, Michael, how do you think if there's one thing or two tips that you could leave our audience with? And let's just say, I think most of our audience, they're employees, either in-house or in consulting firms, so they don't necessarily have that luxury to drop a client or say
Yeah.
no to work, right? And I think a lot of our listeners are on the delivery side. So with that in mind, how might you advise that they approach their projects within, within their constraints that they have with that
Yeah.
focus on end user enablement?
Yes, in that position, finding consistency in the format of your deliverables and continuing. So, like I was talking about with that estimate sheet, I bring it up every week. People are very familiar with it. So, when those change conversations happen, they're quick, they don't drag out for 2 weeks. So, having that consistent deliverable in front of my clients, or let's say if you're an employee in front of your manager, just allows them to make decisions very quickly and for you to move forward. So I think, yeah, looking back to when I was an employee, not making a new document for every decision and having someone learn what the format is and try to process it every single time, having something consistent to show people would have really helped me just move the work forward rather than battle with decision makers. And yeah, number two, just the try to get things in front of the people that need to make decisions on them as early as possible. Going back to the MVP stuff, don't spin your wheels trying to make things perfect, but get feedback early and often. Yeah, I used to think like work would get done and then it would be done, but I see now that is not a thing. So getting that feedback, I know it's a little annoying potentially, but it helps the work move forward. And yeah, those two things, I think they just help me be a lot more productive at the end of the day. Day to day, it didn't feel that way, but when I look back, at 6 months worth of work, wow, those made all the difference.
Thank you for sharing with us.
Mm
And Michael, I like to ask all of our guests this one question. Do you have a favorite quote
I
besides quoting
do.
God? Just another
Yeah.
God quoting.
My brother's gonna listen to this and be like, he quoted God. I have a Mark Twain quote that we used at our Forslandia and Mile High Dreamin' talks last year. It's I didn't have time to write a short letter, so I wrote a long one instead. So as a consultant, I always strive to write that short letter. I'm going to do as much work on my side that I can, so whoever's listening to me easily understands what I'm communicating. I want that person to spend as little brain power as possible trying to understand context. I want them to just give me a thumbs up, thumbs down. Do you get it? Yes, no. Because, that's going to save everyone time in the long run. So, yeah, Mark Twain for the win.
Go Mark Twain. I love
Yeah.
that. I'll take a page out of that book. I'm working on being more concise. Which I just laugh because on these podcasts, I just go and go and go. I love
Yo.
to talk.
Yeah, this has been fun.
Yay.
I've enjoyed this a lot. You've been great.
Thank you so much for coming
Yeah,
on.
you're
Oh,
welcome.
wait, big and very important question. For people who want to get in touch with you or check you out or engage with Artichoke Consulting, where can they find you?
Yes, LinkedIn, Artichoke Consulting LLC, website artichokeconsultingllc.com. Yeah, we just got a new website. We're ramping up our marketing and sales. So, Artichoke Consulting is open for business. Reach out if you'd like to work with me. I'm available. Coming off paternity leave, I'm ready to get back to it.
I love that. Yay. Well, good. This will be so timely. It'll launch probably just short after you return back. And
Awesome.
thank you. Yes.
Yeah,
Thank you for
thank
coming
you very
on.
much.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Tech Less Podcast. To summarize today's episode, keep end users at the heart of every project to ensure long-term success and happiness. And thank you to our guest, Michael Brandwine, founder of Artichoke Consulting. If you found value from today's podcast, I welcome you to leave a 5-star rating and review on your listening platform. Thank you again, and until next time.